this is for Jeff and Sarah. You know, I hear, you know, a lot, you know, a lot of times, you know, are people going to be interested, you know, in my research? Or do I need to say things like, this is a great program, or take a, you know, or advocate for something, as opposed to something that Cindy says she can't do? You know, some people that, you know, some members that I've spoken with are afraid if they don't say something a little
provocative,
more on the provocative or on the sensational side, that they're not going to get repeat phone calls or not going to get interview requests.
Well, our publications are probably a little different. With Feedstuffs in particular, it's almost like a peer review process. So if you're getting a paper put into Feedstuffs, there's peers throughout the industry, and they're going to respond to me and say, he doesn't know what he's talking about, or this is going on. So we don't want anything exaggerated. We don't want things to be, you know, made stronger statements than what should exist, just because it's, we're very technical, very research-based in what we do and our approach.
But we often things that are provocative or there's a conflict that is come to the surface attracts our attention. Sometimes there's really nothing there, or it's internal, endogenous to the profession, and so. But on the other hand, often it shows that there are simmering stakeholders, and we get a sense of what's really going on. And so, you know, that leads me just to bring up the question, at least for my publication, that is that it's not so much that we want to publish your findings. I mean, we, you know, if they're interesting, it's you're acting in a sector that is incredibly important now, and is I want to know what it's like to be an actor in that sector in terms of what you think is important. What are you concerned about? What are agricultural economists worried about? What do they think they really want to know more about? And to what extent are there tools there to help them pursue it? To what extent do they really have to stop at that border and hand it over to the rest of society to say, we can only go so far with our stats and our data sets and our formula, and we know we're indispensable, you are indispensable, but how do you experience the incredible focus and magnifying glass that food economics is under now? What do you need? I would love to know that, and you know, I would even go so far as to suggest that there be a survey to see what comes through to that could perhaps eventuate in a session next year that's not about my specialty, but how I live my professional life, you know, in a country that sees enormous value and risk in what I'm studying.
If I go ahead, Cindy.
I just wanted to directly answer Jay's point about being provocative and tie it into this, issue of, also trying to remain objective, because we deal with this every day. Like, ERS gets phone calls multiple times a week from reporters, and we train staff, like, the day they come in, they get media training. Like, if you're, well, of course, it won't be someone who's fresh out of grad school that's getting a phone call, because things have to get published first. But the way we do it is what Jeff said earlier, and that is to make it very clear what's at stake. And you can do that in an objective way, but still put it in simple terms that people are going to understand. And having these, three talking points is critical. We urge our staff to do that too, so that you're ready and you can distill the importance of your work down into bits of information that people can immediately grasp and relate to.
So I kind of wanted to just respond to what Jeff said and then ask you two a question. But the first one is, as president of this association, why do we have a communicating out committee? Why do we invest the resources to do that? And I can only answer for me personally, but I think one of the reasons is a lot of the coverage about food and agriculture, not like the Feedstuffs kind of coverage, but like the New York Times, Washington Post kind of coverage. I think, you know, again, I'm just speaking for me personally, probably didn't reflect what I would consider like sort of consensus thinking on a lot of the topics in our profession. And really just comes down to like just trade-offs and costs, you know. You know, it's a whole host of the sort of new food issues, whether it's local foods or fat taxes or, you know, GMOs or whatever. You know, my sense is there's a set of perspectives provided by our tools about costs and trade-offs and unintended consequences that weren't really being reflected in a lot of the reporting on those stories. It was a little more like kind of fanciful thinking. And so, we had to be the dismal, the dismal science wasn't being represented that say, there are costs to these things, there are trade-offs, you know, you might want to think about those. And we have a lot of diversity in our profession about opinions on all those topics and more. And I have particular perspectives on those, but even if my colleagues that differ from my opinion, I know they're going to talk about it from a framework that I can understand and respect that is not being reflected in those kinds of publications. So I would say like this session and that the things like this that were going on are a reflection of maybe frustration, frankly, of a perspective about food and agriculture that wasn't being represented. I think we thought we had a lot of good things to say and are trying to provide a platform, just making sure that we can contribute to these kind of debates. But the question I wanted to ask is different, but it's a little bit related to what Jay asked, and that is, how good do you think you are at predicting what stories are going to be viral or going to be the stories? Do you think you have a good handle on that, like,
so,
the topics?
Yeah, before you say that, I want to echo what Jason said, because if I don't think anybody in their right mind thinks Michael Pollan is an expert on agriculture or anything, but he's always the go-to guy for New York Times and Washington Post and all these other things. It is really, it's troublesome. It makes me kind of doubt the entire journalistic. If they think he's an expert, when they're talking about people about medicine, you know, who are they talking to? It's really a discouraging thing. So I would go farther than Jason. You know, Jason is always so polite. Jason's like, oh, I think maybe we got another perspective. No, that's not me. No, they're wrong. And so we have to correct them. That's the issue.
This is why, by the way, if you're ever asked to be on a panel with Craig Gunderson, you say yes. There will always be one person more provocative than you are. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I have to share my Michael Pollan story because I did interview him. He came to the University of Wisconsin, and I went up there, and I had actually reached out to him about 3 days ahead of time because there were a bunch of farmers that were upset that he was coming to town to talk about Food Inc. or whatever his book was. I forget what his book was. And so they were forming this rally, and I was going to go to the rally. And then I got feeling really guilty that I was only doing one side of the story. So I had to reach out, and I said, Michael, would you sit down and talk to me? Can I interview you? And he said, yes. And I was shocked because I figured he'd be like, who are you, and what do you want? So he did, and I figured he'd come in with a number of folks and, you know, be all in this protected space. It was just him and I for about an hour in a room talking. And it was great, and I corrected him on a few things, like Monsanto no longer owns RBST. But I wrote the article. Oh, my goodness, I caught so much slack. Why do we want to know what his thinking is? Why do we want to know what he cares about? I'm like, you have to understand his side of things so that you can better prepare and counter what he's saying. And it was a very interesting experience. But
no, I... Yeah.
No,
I'm not disagreeing with that. I guess what I would say is that the amount of
a little too provocative, a little too provocative.
Is that the point I make is he gets so much coverage versus others.
Well, my reaction to Jay's remarks is to say, do a media critique as an association or as parts of it. Clearly, it's going to have to be quite rigorous. But I mean, you're all about rigor, so I think that's it. I mean, I'd love to know that. Clearly, food media is floundering around the fact that there's a new intense kind of interest in food, but the tools are not necessarily there, and the path of least resistance is to either be, you know, enter a Manichaean universe where there's, you know, there are devils and angels and no one in between. And also the path of least resistance is to go toward the sensuous pleasures of the food experience. So both of those have to be resisted. I would love to read We did a panel at South by Southwest in March on food media particularly. So we think we actually track food media, not just the food thing, because we think it's... So, come to me, call me.
I'll send you my book.
Please, yeah. I'll buy it.
Which is in large part a critique of the media coverage of these issues. Yeah.
But I think what you guys are doing here is great, your outreach effort to the media. I'm going to keep this book that I got, and I'll have all these resources of people I didn't even know were studying certain areas. And, you know, I'm sure Jay will get me in contact with him if there's a topic that I need to reach out on. So I think, you know, you've made some really great first steps. We haven't, you know, Feedstuffs has worked with a bunch of ag economists, never really worked with this group per se. So, you know, I'm almost ashamed to say that, but it's true. So,
I didn't know about Jay's book until I looked you up coming here. So yeah. That's my fault. Yeah.